So I'll go ahead and get started. Thank you for having me and inviting. Alberto, your program seems to be very important for collaborating with Rome to move this forward. Hopefully in the future that would be, I'm great at talking. So hopefully that will be used for post-event preparations also, so in the future. Will that be used for post-event? So say you have an earthquake. Yes. You will be able to use your program for assessing how to respond? Yes. Okay. I'll move into my talk right now while they're trying to figure out where it is. So I'm here representing the city of Los Angeles. Our mayor, our mayor's office has been working with the 100 resilient cities. We do not yet have a resilience officer like Alessandro is for Rome. But I was able to work on developing a resilience program with the mayor's office that the mayor released late last year in December 2014 called Resilience by Design. And since nobody here is from the city of Los Angeles except for myself, I will take credit for actually using that term. So my term, Resilience by Design, for the LA Water System became the mayor's report name. So I'm proud of that, although I don't get to mention that anywhere because the mayor's not here, so I can say that. So my presentation, I had to mention I'm co-authoring with Dr. Lucy Jones because as I was preparing all this, you'll see that she was heavily involved and I used much of her work to make this presentation and I felt bad not including her as a co-presenter or co-author. So what am I going to do today? So what I want to do is first talk about Los Angeles, what we are doing, where are we going, and how we got there. Those typically will not be the slide headings, but that's the idea that I want to bring forward. Then go to the questions at the very end. I have 4 or 5 slides that Alessandro had asked that we address. So as I go through the presentation, I will try to focus on things related to evaluating exposure and vulnerability, the critical assets and infrastructure and their selection, challenges for urban resilience-oriented governance, and the best strategies for mapping infrastructure, collecting and sharing data. And I'm not sure that I will go through them in that order. Okay, so as I mentioned, our mayor, Eric Garcetti, implemented a year-long study for the year of 2014, last year, to determine what should we be doing to initiate activities towards improving the resilience of the city of Los Angeles. He teamed up with Dr. Lucy Jones from the United States Geologic Survey, and in doing so, they did the first time we had ever had a high-level scientist working for the federal government, supported by funding from our taxpayers to actually work 3/4 time, or 80% of her time, 4 out of 5 days a week for the city to develop this program. So that was a first ever for the United States. And they decided to address 3 key issues. One of those is old buildings, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. The water system, which is a municipal water system for the city of Los Angeles, which is where I work, and telecommunications. The report was announced and put out to the public in December 8th of 2014. I thought I had a web page for you somewhere. I'm sorry about that, but you could just Google it and it shows right up on the website. Like I said, it was called Resilience by Design, and I just wanted to... Dr. Jones led that whole year with the mayor's staff. So I just wanted to give her time here since she's not with us. So this is her slide. So then going back, how did we get to thinking this way? Where did we go with that? We started by, it's actually a long evolution that did not start in 2014. It started well before that. It's a continuous evolution, really, if you start thinking back. So we are at risk in Los Angeles to numerous extreme events. And some of them hit periodically. Like every 6 to 20 years, we get earthquakes that are right in the city of Los Angeles. We have urban fires. It was a few years ago in all of Southern California, we had over 1 million people evacuated in Southern California due to a series of blazes that were threatening a large number of cities. So this was a regional resilience issue. We get landslides and debris flows every year. We're dealing with climate change effects in many aspects and so on. I don't want to go through those in detail. We also deal with the cascading and multi-hazard aspects that we see come around every year. So we might have a fire that maybe doesn't directly threaten homes or the city, but it wipes out the mountains around the city, and then we get debris flows the next year that come down and actually threaten significant parts of the neighborhoods. Then also we realize that we are part of a mega city. So there is a Los Angeles mega city concept. So Los Angeles is 4 million people. The mega city is about 18 million people. So it's the whole surrounding region of just one large metropolitan area that covers five counties, and the counties in Southern California are larger than many of the, in area and sometimes in population, are larger than some of the countries in Europe. So this is a very large and populated area. We are the largest city there, and we're all in it together. So just because we have this little island within a metropolitan area that might be resilient, or we would think we were resilient, we really wouldn't be if the rest of the mega city is not resilient. So we're recognizing that we need to work with all of the other governance structures in the surrounding metropolitan area. So we decided to start with seismic resilience. Why did we decide that? Well, we have all these threats, so why did we choose earthquake? Some of these other things, like fires, we actually get every year. And usually it's on the surrounding hillsides, not major blazes and conflagrations inside the urban area. Well, because we know it's a widespread risk. It's a regional issue. Sometimes it's a local issue just in the city of Los Angeles because we're so large. Sometimes, but we expect a very significant regional earthquake from the San Andreas Fault. We want to address all the issues around all these different hazards individually and combined where necessary for multi-hazard aspects. And we also want to integrate the sustainability, the multiple hazards, the address the infrastructure issues, deterioration, renewal, and improvement, and other associations with infrastructure and system interdependencies. I'm going to use this symbol in a few areas throughout the slides that identify where we're actually integrating all of this with earthquakes. We want to develop a resilience culture throughout the city as best we can in every city department and all of the other utilities and critical infrastructure owners that support the city. We need to do this on a regional basis because some of those aren't actually in Southern California, but as a mega city, you get all the support from outside the area that is imported. We want to focus on maintaining the economy and population security. This is actually the bottom line. If we aren't able to support the economy and the population and the city starts to leave, then we certainly weren't resilient. And that's what we need to focus on. And everything else kind of follows after that implementing those concepts and using that as the target. And we also want to have a very long-term view. We want to develop a program. It's not a project. There's a very significant difference between a project and a program. So we want to develop a program to include the other hazards over time, but again, starting with seismic. So we want to look at resilience initially through a seismic lens. So we're kind of limiting the focus because to do all of those hazards and all of those issues at once, you'll never get started because it's just, you can't get your mind around it. This is one thing that we recognized early on when we started thinking through the problem. So we want to initiate it with seismic in mind and deal with the seismic risks because it's an obvious springboard to move forward. We have earthquakes, and when we have earthquakes, that's usually where we have the greatest amount of damage because it's widespread. An earthquake is actually multi-hazard by definition. You have ground shaking, you have landslides, you have liquefaction, you have all kinds of things going on with it. So we think that if we work mostly through that risk, then we start unfolding and being able to work more easily with many of the other risks. You actually have fire after earthquakes, too, that we have to deal with in a more vulnerable situation. But when we're implementing these, when we're choosing our activities, we think about how do these when we prioritize which activities, we want to think about the other hazards as well. That might help us prioritize which ones to undertake first, help us to move forward. We want to do, when I asked the mayor's office what is one of the messages they want to get across, it's this next bullet. Whoops. I can't get where I'm at. Do as much as we can with the limited resources we have. We are a large city. We have lots of income coming in, more of it going out than we have coming in now. And we have many departments and expertise, but they're all busy. They're there for a reason. They are not at everybody's fingertips to implement resilience activities. So we have limited resources. Everybody has limited money and resources. How can we get started with those limited resources? That's a big issue, and that's something that we're tackling. So why earthquakes again? This is California, and the city of Los Angeles is in the southern part of California, and we have a big risk. So here's the San Andreas Fault. It's the longest and the most recurring earthquake. So every about 150 years, you get somewhere between a magnitude 7.5 to 8.0 earthquake on the San Andreas Fault. The most famous one is the San Francisco area. I'll show it in a little bit. We expect one down here. It's on average every 150 years, but it hasn't occurred in 300 years. So we're way behind the curve on that. That might imply that we're going to get a very large earthquake in the near future. The probabilities on that are relatively high. If we have an earthquake down here, it could be a very significant regional issue. And prior to initiating this resilience program, I'll show you that there's already a lot of work done to help us understand that. And this was part of that work. So if what I'm showing here is actually an earthquake scenario, and is it moving? No, it's not moving. Now it's moving. Okay, so this is a time-lapse video scenario, I guess. It's not actually recorded. On the computer. So we have an earthquake on the southern end of the San Andreas Fault. The Mexican border to California is right down in here. And so this earthquake is rupturing. We're looking at it from the vantage point here. So we're looking from this point south. So if you look, you see the intensity of red, which is, so the higher intensity is red, lower intensities go to yellow and green, and it's moving forward. We're standing up here. The earthquake is occurring. Some areas are really shaken and damage is occurring, and yet in northern Los Angeles, we don't know that this earthquake is occurring yet. This is a great example of use for earthquake early warning. Now what you're going to see here is the movement. So now we're getting light intensity shaking. You know the earthquake is here, but you don't know how big it is yet. So you're going to see the earthquake movement come in here. And then you're going to see how long this intensity and these waves shake in Los Angeles. So it gets very long. Now think about this. We're already over 1 minute into the earthquake, and the fault has not stopped rupturing yet. The fault is only about two-thirds of the way through. So you can see the dimension of the fault rupture up here. Feel the time. Think about how big this earthquake is going to be in Los Angeles. We're still waiting. Now we're starting to shake quite a bit. Now you're getting scared. Now the buildings are really swaying. The ground is oscillating. It is 1,000 times, so you can feel it a little bit more, but you're shaking in 3 dimensions now. The fault just recently stopped rupturing, but the waves are moving forward and affecting the rest of Southern California. So we're over 2 minutes now since the earthquake started. Of course, we're not shaking all that time. We're shaking for about a minute and a half. So this area down here is probably on light shaking now. We're starting to subside in northern Los Angeles area. The silence could be deafening here, but you would actually be hearing lots of emergency stuff going on, lots of cracking, and hopefully not too many buildings falling, but we actually predict that we will have some significant issues with buildings. Okay, so what does this mean? Here's the true scale of that. So this is that same model, just in a single print, of the earthquake that we just showed. It's called the shakeout scenario. It's a magnitude 7.8 earthquake. It is not an unrealistic earthquake. It's a very plausible earthquake. It is not two standard deviations away. It is a deterministic earthquake that is very reasonable to everybody. This is the 1906 earthquake, and you can see the comparison. Now, 1994, everybody thinks we had a very large earthquake. This is the same scale. So the Northridge earthquake only affected this area. It was not a large earthquake. This is not a big event. So it was a significant event, but it is not a large regional event. So we decided to take the concepts from the shakeout scenario because it already evaluated the effects to the infrastructure and the people and the society and the economy. So taking results of that, all this you can find if you wanted to study it more. It's on the USGS website. You can just Google shakeout scenario. So we get widespread strong shaking from long duration. You get landslides, you get liquefaction, you get all kinds of things. That leads to 300,000 buildings are significantly damaged. It's one in every 16 buildings in Los Angeles. 255,000 displaced people. That's one in 16. I think this is all of Southern California, not just Los Angeles. 53,000 injuries and 1,800 deaths. That's actually a good number, 1,800 deaths. That means that we're fairly prepared with the buildings and the survival rate. We'd like to get it to zero, but that might be impossible. So buildings was chosen because of this. That's one of the infrastructure that we need to worry about. Up to 6 months without water. I'll show you how all of our water is imported across that fault, the majority of it. And we get fire. Fire it cannot be controlled without water. So water was chosen as a big issue. And business disruption just doubles the losses. In fact, the water losses alone can put Southern California in a recession without even worrying about the rest of the issues, just looking at the economic impacts. Okay. So urban disaster resilience is a society that functions after the disaster. And our goals are to protect the lives during the earthquake, improve the city's ability to respond, and improve the city's capacity for recovery. The mayor went out and created technical panels, task force they call them. So some for the buildings, went to the water department. They asked me to lead that. And they went to private telecommunication providers. The four major cellular providers were brought in and worked together. That was interesting, but in the end, it all became positive. So our buildings. These are the final recommendations that were developed. So we want to implement mandatory retrofit of soft first story buildings. That's this type. This is a collapse of a soft first story building in 1994. Mandatory retrofit of unreinforced concrete buildings. Not all buildings. I'm sorry. Non-ductile reinforced concrete buildings. It's not all concrete buildings, but non-ductile reinforced concrete buildings. This is an example of a collapse of a hospital in 1971 from that type of building. We have a back-to-business inspection program to help get people back into their buildings and inspected as soon as possible. And we have an excessive damage mandate, meaning that if you get damage in a building from a small earthquake, you are mandated to fix it right away. One thing that we're not dealing with is unreinforced masonry buildings. That's because the city of Los Angeles was the first in the United States, if not the world, to mandate in the 1980s to retrofit all unreinforced masonry buildings. If this was in Christchurch, you would have seen a very different result in Christchurch. It's a building that has very weak first floor. There are no sheer walls. It's up on a few columns. The rest of the structure is built very well, but it's kind of flimsy to lateral movement. So it's very weak. It'll lean way over, and then it'll fall off of its column, basically, is what's happening. Okay, so here's one of our blue ribbons. What are we doing here? We're eliminating killer buildings by improving the vulnerable infrastructure. So not only are we eliminating the vulnerable buildings, but we're actually improving the life of that, right? So we're, okay. So our building stock has problems. If you go by building code, what we find, which is the way our buildings are, we only get 49%. We have 49% of our buildings are unusable. That's not a resilient community. We need to work on that. So we're recommending to volunteer a volunteer rating system. Yes. Okay, so we want to fortify our water system. I actually gave a presentation on this earlier today, so I don't want to go through it in great detail. But what are we doing? So we're going to be dealing with multi-hazard, earthquake, drought, and fire. That's one of the blue ribbons. I mentioned earlier, all these aqueducts that we bring water in crosses the San Andreas Fault. We lose 88% of our water immediately when that fault ruptures that I showed you earlier. We want to develop our local water supplies. We use groundwater. We need to clean up our contaminated groundwater, use recycled water, improve that, and stormwater capture. Here we are improving resilience with sustainability. We want to create a seismic resilient network. Here we're implementing multiple hazards protection for a water system by doing that. And we're able to do that by saving money, reducing the life cycle costs. We reduce our water loss. We increase the pipe longevity. We increase the personal safety, less injuries during installation. And there's a lot of improvements we get out of that. And we want to enhance the telecommunications. We have an MOU with the providers to open this up for everybody to use in an emergency. That's about to be signed. We'll get more resilient power, and there's some other aspects with Wi-Fi that the city's going to put in using green power. This is applicable to any hazard. Okay, so moving forward, we've released the report. We're engaging other Los Angeles communities. Well, we're engaging the communities throughout Los Angeles. The mayor is holding periodic meetings about every month with different areas of the community throughout Los Angeles. Actually, he's having one today. We're engaging the broader megacity region, as I mentioned. He's having conferences with the other mayors and meeting with their communities discussing this. We're implementing the recommendations. And as I mentioned earlier, we want to expand over time. So thank you. Oh, no, I need to go through this real quick. Evaluating the exposure and vulnerability. I mentioned in this like a recommendation, but it's really what we did. Okay, so we performed threat and hazard identification risk assessment, but that was done before 2014. We utilized that. We identified and mapped the hazards which may provide the critical shocks and stresses, not just earthquakes. That was also done before 2014. So we capitalized on these things in advance. We overlay these with the infrastructure. So for the shakeout scenario, we got all of the infrastructure maps and overlaid them with the ground motions, with the fault ruptures, the landslides, liquefaction, and made estimates on what the damage to those would be. So similar, it was discussed in a previous presentation. We assessed the infrastructure fragility to the hazards. As I mentioned, using plausible scenario events so the community actually believes that this can happen. This was very important, and it was very successful in that way, looking at the shakeout scenario and assessing the damages to the events, to this critical infrastructure. Assessing the consequence is very important, including the dependency relationships, as you mentioned, Alessandro. So identifying critical assets and infrastructure. So we had already assembled critical asset and key resource catalog that resides in different areas in the city. Performed capability assessments and the gap analysis. So what is it capable of, and what do we need to do for making it resilient in the future? Identify those critical infrastructure which present the greatest opportunity for the largest consequences, including economic, social, and the infrastructure itself, and the interdependencies of that infrastructure. We prioritize, identify those greatest risks, develop some solutions, and implement those when funding and the resources are available. You're not going to just go out and start implementing all this. You have to choose. And make strategic investments with the limited resources that you had. Again, one of the key messages from the mayor's office. And the challenges. I think this is my last slide. So limited resources. Funding, knowledge, personnel and techniques. There's research that's got to go with this so that we know how to implement these things. Creating a culture of resilience. The social, the institutional, each organization has its own culture and the way they're going to think about that. And if it's a large organization, different offices within there are going to have their own culture. Getting everybody on board with a common direction is very important, and making it at a systemic level with all the people moving in one direction is very important. So, and also creating the partnerships and the common vision, which is, I think, one of the messages Christchurch has been bringing in every one of their presentations, how to use your partnerships, work with the people, make consistent objectives to move it forward. And one of the really big issues is to ensure that you have good leadership. From my observation so far, you have a very dynamic and good leader with Alessandro in trying to move this forward. And
you can't forget that there are champions out there that will, on their own, believe in this so much that they will make this happen in different organizations. You have to allow that to happen. Allow those champions to step up at whatever level they're working at and help engage and move this forward. So thank you for your time.